And welcome to Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dubin. Thank you for joining us. We come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time. We stream live on the internet, richarddugan.com and newspress.com. And we are also archived at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. And I'm sorry for constantly using that word. We are also rebroadcast Sundays at 3 p.m. on A2Zen.fm. That's A2Zen, A, the letter A, the number 2, Z-E-N.fm. So if you would like to catch us again without having to go to richarddugan.com, or, you know, you just want to pass that on, certainly do so. We have the program archived at richarddugan.com. So lots of ways of hearing this program. We link to our guests at richarddugan.com, so you can also check out their information as well. We encourage you to do that. Well, we are better than halfway through 2012. Things are constantly changing and in motion. And, you know, whether it's 2012 or 1912, things are changing and constantly in motion. It really doesn't matter what calendar date you're looking at. The one constant in the universe, as they say, is change. And we are changing. We are growing. They say that the physical human body is renewed once every 7 years, the trillions of cells. But we also take a look at the fact on this program that there is no real physical existence, that it's all energy. All of the subatomic and the atomic and the particles, the molecules, the cells, and on as you grow throughout the universe to the, you know, the meteors and the planets and the solar systems and the galaxies and then the totality of the universe. It's kind of strange, but it's all just energy. And that's what our science is telling us. And what we're going to talk about today delves into that arena, because a lot of people, as we have found doing this particular topic, have a great deal of fear and angst about it. And that has to do with the subject of death and dying, or as I like to refer to it, transitioning, because that's really what's happening. As a matter of fact, at the time of this program, I have just watched the remake of the late plate, the movie that came out with Keanu Reeves in it about planet Earth and how the aliens come to basically, quote, save the Earth, not the humans, the Earth. And a very interesting commentary on where we are today. My guest today is Danian Brinkley, and he is, if you will, an expert. Danian, welcome to our program.
Richard, thank you for having me.
Would you consider yourself an expert on the subject of death and dying because you've had near-death experiences? If you hadn't had them, would you even care?
Well, basically, I wouldn't have cared.
But you did. But you had these experiences.
Well, I grew up a tough guy, you know, United States Marine Corps, played sports. Mm-hmm. I'm a hillbilly from South Carolina. At 25 years old, you think you're immortal. And then I was struck by lightning and dead for 28 minutes, completely paralyzed for 6 days, partially paralyzed for 7 months. It took me 2 years to learn to walk and feed myself again. And I had then what is now known as a near-death experience. Richard, back in 1975, Dr. Raymond Moody had not written his classic book, Life After Life.
Mm-hmm.
And here I was in the middle of fundamentalist nowhere, because I'm from South Carolina and everybody goes to hell down here.
Mm-hmm.
So here I was in this fundamentalist psychology. Well, it's true. Here I am in this fundamentalist psychology where I have experienced the most magnificent system of transition. And I had watched it and witnessed this thing that I didn't live in fear of death before it happened. I absolutely do not live in fear of quote-unquote death now, because I know it doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched the process by which we leave. And what it led me to do is become a hospice volunteer, because once you go through this process and you see what is now a term I coined called the panoramic life review, you really see the value of what this life is. And I became a hospice volunteer. After 35 years of being a hospice volunteer, soon probably 36 years, 28 years as a volunteer in the VA system, being with more than 2,000 probably by the time this airs, probably, let's say, 2,005 people leaving this world and 421 taking their last breath. I would have to say that I was an expert in the process of transition, and I will agree with your word. And all the fear mechanisms and all the conspiracies and all the foolishness that is used to lead us there, religions, institutions, governments, everything that makes us frightened of the fact that we are not permanent. Let me ask you a question, Richard. Do you know what the number one cause of quote-unquote death in America is?
I could throw a couple of out. Heart disease, cancer, not sure.
Birth.
Well, my father did tell me that, none of us will get out of this life alive.
And then think about this, like your mama told you, if you did number one, you're going to do number two.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So the very moment you realize that the number one cause of death is birth, and the fact that you are born, you will leave.
Well, now, of course, that does fly in the face of those people who believe in immortality. How, and I ask this in seriousness because there are people who believe that we should be able to live 100, 200, 300. I mean, they will even go back to biblical passages from the Old Testament.
Methuselah lived 900 years.
Exactly.
Well, I think those people should be incarcerated.
Okay.
You only come for a certain period of time, Richard.
Okay.
Because this is the opportunity to become a co-creator. You separate into an energy form. You condense your concept into what appears to be physical matter.
Mm-hmm.
And you're able to have certain side effects like fear and joy. And to be able to take all of that and preset certain obligations and obstacles so that you can overcome them to see your power as a co-creator.
Mm.
And it's a short period of time to do that. Everything is about how much compassion and love and support you put in this world. That's the measure of who you are and how you face your obstacles, knowing that you are eternal. Okay? Most people who want to stay here forever or who keeps looking at life and longevity are people, I hope, trying to get other people to take better care of themselves while they're here. But regardless, you will be leaving this plane because you set a certain amount of time to be here, a certain amount of concepts and obstacles and successes, and when that happens, you go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I'm really thankful for because if you realize, as people are coming back, cardiopulmonary resuscitation, Richard, are bringing so many people back.
Mm-hmm.
That who is to blame for the near-death experience? Science.
Interesting.
Medicine.
Interesting.
Medicine is the blame. They have developed techniques that bring us back to life. When this happened to me in 1975, if you had no oxygen to your brain for 5 minutes, you were considered brain dead, and then you were considered dead.
Mm-hmm.
They're resuscitating people up to 3 hours now.
Wow.
So at what point is this so-called event called death, when does it occur? My problem is most people aren't afraid of the thought of dying. They're afraid of going to hell and fear of the unknown. But Richard, they're more afraid of pain, and they're more afraid of suffering. Because medicine has the ability to keep a body functioning for 2 years,
mm-hmm.
and that person is brain dead. We've seen this Terry Schiavo event.
I remember.
We see people on that. Okay, if you cannot breathe on your own, after a certain period, and take you off a ventilator, and you cannot breathe on your own, it is time for you to go.
Yeah. Let me ask you something. You were born in, you weren't actually born or you don't actually live in the buckle of the Bible Belt. I was thinking you are there in the strap of the Bible Belt. And you defy a biblical passage, if you will, and there are many people who do, that says it is appointed to every man once to die, then the judgment. And the only other person to ever have been brought back from the dead from a biblical standpoint was Lazarus. And there was no medical intervention there. That would be classified as a miracle.
And Jesus.
And Jesus. Well, okay, I beg your pardon. I'm sorry. There were two. But Jesus was the one who, I guess, assisted in the process of bringing Lazarus back. So I'm curious as to your religious upbringing and how you were able to, through that experience that you had back in the 70s, being electrocuted, hit with lightning, and being dead for 28 minutes, how you were able to somehow work through that. Because I've met many Christians. I've even had one gentleman on who intentionally induces out-of-body experiences, which are different, it's explained to me, than near-death experiences, or being declared dead. But I said, is there anything in the Bible? Because again, he's a born again evangelical Bible believing Christian. I says, where in the Bible, because I know it pretty well, does it say that you can do that? He says, nowhere. And yet I'm finding more and more people of different belief systems who are actually stepping outside of those belief systems with the experiences that they have.
But you don't have any choice. I mean, we now live in a world where it's not, you know, it was once eternal damnation if you read the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Until Gutenberg invented the printing press, you could only hear the words as being translated from some minister, okay?
Right.
But now we live in a world of connectivity. We now see things that, we now photograph ghosts. We have films of ghosts because of the high resolution of digital compressed information. We now know that there are dimensions of reality that exist all around us. We now know the world's not flat. We now know that the Earth is not center of the universe. And not only that, we now know there is more than one universe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And then when you start to put that in the perspective of a 2,000-year-old story, and that didn't become a real true value until the Edict of Nicaea in 325, and then the establishment of the Edict of Milan in 348 to create what we now call the Bible,
mm-hmm.
You have to take a second look. You can't believe every single word is true, because when you start to look at that and you look at how it was brought into being and you look at how many phases it's been through, because reincarnation wasn't taken out of the Bible until 550. It was declared outlawed by the Pope. But Origen, the original writer of these reincarnation and multiple life extensions for the first 100 years, was Origen, and they declared him a heretic.
Mm-hmm.
And look at Newton.
Newton was
an astrologer.
Mm-hmm.
He created Newtonian mechanics. Copernicus and Galileo were tormented by the church for coming up with absolutely true principles. So for me, I never believed all that stuff. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
When they tried to tell me, when I was a kid, and I'll go quickly through this, when I was a kid, you know, I was basically a troublemaker because they didn't have Ritalin when I was growing up. So I had to go to the Bible study weekend, and they would pound in you that you were going to hell if you didn't love God, and that the earth was only 6,000 years old, and, you know, I kept wondering where the dinosaurs came from. And then they started telling me this story that I was born in original sin. Okay, and that means I was guilty of a snake telling a woman to get a guy to eat an apple so he could realize he was naked. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So when I heard the Adam and Eve story, and I started to look at that, how many women will stand around if there's a snake? And how many will stand around? I'm 14 years old, Richard.
Uh-huh.
How many women are going to stand around if a snake starts to talk to you?
Mm-hmm.
I'm out of here. Or I'm going to capture that snake and take him to the circus.
Especially if he can talk.
Right? Yes, sir, buddy. So what I started to look at was, what in the world happened? And after I had this experience, I became like a biblical scholar. I mean, Harper One publishes my book. It's the same publisher that publishes the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And I am very proud to be a part of the Harper One stable because they really develop a lot of books about the quotes and misquotes about the Bible, and they really look at the Bible. You know, when you look at the four Gospels, and we keep have the nativity scene, and then we say that Joseph and Mary and Jesus went to Egypt. Well, in the four Gospels that tell of the crucifixion of Jesus, only one of them says he went to Egypt. Two said he stayed in Bethlehem, and one said he went back to Nazareth. So which one of those do you believe? If all the Bible is the absolute truth, then how do you have four different versions of the same event? And how come he went to three different places?
Yeah.
So what happened to me was I got hypocritical. I began to resent people because they had somewhere to go, and I didn't.
Mm.
I had nowhere to run. I had to live with what I knew was real, and that we are dimensional spiritual beings. Think of this. We are made of atoms, and within we're made up of cells, which are made up of molecules, which are made up of atoms. That's basic physical science.
Mm-hmm.
If you took all the empty space out of an atom, it's 94.6%. And you took all the empty space out of a molecule, which is 98%. And you took all the empty space out of a cell, which is about 97% of the human body. You could put everybody in America and everybody that lives on this earth, all 7 billion of us, in a matchbox.
Wow. That's a lot of space that's taken out.
You got it. So all of a sudden, you have to stop and say, well, who are you then? If everything you think is physical matter, Richard, of every person on this earth can be put in a matchbox, you have to stop to think. But where the lesson comes is in 1989, I had to have open-heart surgery from the damage the lightning had done to my body, and I had another one of these experiences.
Mm.
And I began to really study how it operates as a mechanism. And then I became more enthralled with death. First, I now reinforce the fact that it never happens. And second, the art form of so many people coming back, and then the privilege of being able to help people at the end of their lives who's never had this kind of experience help find closure and make that transition. Then in 1997, I had to have brain surgery. There was brain surgery and open heart surgery. They gave me an 8% chance to survive. And then I had a massive grand mal seizure, and I had a third near-death experience. And in 2008, I had to have heart surgery again, and I didn't have an experience. I was just like everybody else. I went under, woke up, and there was nothing. So in the course of five surgeries, three of these have been near-death experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And I have talked to people who were absolute fundamentalists, die-hard, rah-rah, who had a near-death experience, who completely changed. But the greatest lesson, Richard, is this. There will come a time after you've lifted out of your body and acclimated to your natural self, moved down a tunnel and made transitioned across a void, and then you meet every person that you've ever known or ever loved, all your pets, all your friends, everybody that's ever been a part of your life comes to share your return. And then you will have this being be present with you. I used to try to figure out who this being was because everybody said it was Jesus and Buddha and Allah and Muhammad, and they all had these names for it. Well, after three of these experiences and studying it for 35 years, that being that you meet at the end of the tunnel is you. Okay? It's you.
The man in the mirror.
Yeah, that's exactly who it is. But the coolest thing is this. You will see your entire life pass before you in a 360-degree panorama. You will have missed nothing.
Hmm.
you will know how many hairs was in the nose of the doctor who pulled you from your mother.
I don't know that I want to know that. But...
Yeah, but you will.
Yes.
There's nothing you're going to be able to do about it. You'll know every label, every word ever said, how many leaves were on the tree when they took you out to the car. You read every license plate for 3,000 blocks. You know everything. Then second, you will watch it from a second-person point of view, as if you were your best friend looking at the choices that you made. And you'll be amazed at how often you say, wow, way to go, Daniel. Man, what a fool you were in that choice. And then you will literally become every person you ever encounter, and you'll feel the direct results of your interaction between you and that person. You become them. The greatest lesson that you learn from that is you always have to pay attention to why you're doing what you're doing, not what you're doing. Why? What is your intention? That is the driver. Why am I doing this as opposed to what am I doing? Mm. Then comes the system of judgment, and the system of judgment is this. If the divine or God, depends on what word people want to use, I like divinity. If divinity could not come today and divinity sent you, in the life you just reviewed, what difference did he make? Well, that's happened to me 3 times. And I've got to watch the progression over 22 years of how I've grown. And now everything's about love and everything's about what you believe about your love. We all live in a world where we give our love to something. And we wait for it to measure it and give it a value and give it back to us before we apply that to the identity of our love. That's the failure. Then it affects the choices that we make. So we're going through 3 of these, Richard, and watching it and studying people now for 35 years because I live in it every day. I do hospice and talk to families of veterans and help them fight the government, and I do it every day. And so... when you look at that, I'm going to be every person that I ever encounter.
Mm.
That's why I do hospice work.
Interesting.
It's going to be the difference that God makes in these people's lives when they're frightened and their families are frightened, and I can calmly sit there and work them through it. Everybody wants to know that their life mattered.
Yes.
And everybody wants to know that they'll be remembered and that they were appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
And I've developed a whole course called in The Twilight Brigade. You know, it's Danion.com, but TheTwilightBrigade.com, to teach people how to be present in the transition of these people's lives. And I am proud to have more than 5,000 people in 22 states who do nothing but this.
That's fantastic. I do have to say that as you're talking about this process, that I'm reminded of the movie Defend Your Life with Meryl Streep and Albert Brooks, and I'm thinking, gee, that seemed kind of like a fun way to deal with the afterlife and Judgment Day and all of those kinds of things. And it looks like fun. You can eat whatever you want. You don't gain any weight. But the one key, of course, was the fact that Albert thought he was being judged for all of these different things, and he finally did get it. But I think that's one of the issues that we all have to come to grips with, and that is that we aren't going to be judged by some outward external source. We're doing it right now. We don't have to wait until the afterlife. And that's something that we'll talk about maybe in the next segment as well. My guest is Danion Brinkley, and his website is danion.com. That's D-A-N-N as in Nancy, I-O-N, that's D-A-N-N-I-O-N.com. And you also mentioned the other website was The Twilight Brigade.com. Yeah. TheTwilightBrigade.com. I'm Richard Dugan, and we'll be back with Danion in just a moment. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. As we merrily roll along here on the program, I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, and I'm here with Danion Brinkley. We're talking about the process of transitioning and his work in hospice. I have not, Danion, had the experience, A, of any near-death or out-of-body. I've also not been around a human at the moment of transition. The closest I have had that experience has been with a pet, a cat. Several years ago, my wife and I knew, we actually took the animal to the vet, and they said, you know what, and I have to applaud the vet for this, because they said, you know, we could do extensive tests to try to find out what the problem is, but the bottom line is, from what they'd already done, the animal is just too far gone and does not seem to be suffering. So we took the animal home, took the cat home, and laid in bed with it for several hours as it went through the moment of transition. My wife says that she experienced the cat's essence, if you will, passing right through her. Which
have absolutely no problem with that.
None whatsoever. Whereas I was more concerned with her safety, because as the cat began to take its last fifth and fourth and third and second and first breath before transition, its claws would flail out, and it would cry out of a sort, as if it were going to attack. She wasn't afraid, but of course the intellectual part of me, the protector part of me, you know, was a little concerned. But if she was fine, I just stayed calm. And we just went through that process, and it was for her much more of an experience from that standpoint on a deeper level than it was for me, because that's where she is. She cares so much for the patients that she deals with in the clinic where she works, and the animals that we have. And when we hear about these tragedies of animals and so forth, it just breaks her heart. There are people who are sort of empathic that way, empathetic, if you will, and they really connect. Do you find that through your hospice work that you were one of those who was really able to connect with that person, entity, if you will, who was leaving the vehicle?
Oh, it's no question. I've seen it all, Richard. I mean, I've been with 2,000 people. I see people walking down the halls that's probably been passed who've never had closure in hospitals and VAs. I mean, I see them all the time anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I don't have a problem. I have gone down the tunnel with people because I have become such close friends of theirs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people that I've become to know, especially veterans, because I'm an old former Marine, and that camaraderie creates such a place. But as to your wife, sensing the essence transcending from this level to another, because that essence passes through her, because she's creating that place where her love empowers that being to let her know that they are moving safely. Okay, and the whole idea of the claws and all of that, we have instinctual patterns of protection. That's the mental and physical part, like an animal, I guess it would be instinctual to defend itself, because that's how an animal does. It will fight to the death when pushed against the wall. So I think that was that natural tendency. As you begin to lose this consciousness and gain the ethereal consciousness, that would be a normal reaction. But I have absolutely no doubt that people are next to the bedside are experiencing much of what that person's going through. And I will contribute a lot of it to Dr. Raymond Moody and Paul Perry and Bruce Grayson and Michael Sabom and Melvin Morris, the people who have written these books, and Jeffrey Long. People have written these books that give people a basic understanding of the near-death experience. And as they read these books and then they apply it to people who are their loved ones, someone who have loved them or someone who they have loved, and they watch the things unfold the way these descriptions are, and I'll include myself in that, Daniel Brinkley, the way that these descriptions are, they begin to connect. We all know scientifically that we are, every single one of us are connected. Science calls it dark matter. I think that's a really funny term to use for God. But nonetheless, they all say we are suspended and connected in dark matter. Okay, now that's proven and replicated, because now they're trying to find the Higgs boson particle in Switzerland, at the CERN collider, where they're colliding photons and electrifying photons and bombarding them to create the concept of the Big Bang Theory. Well, none of that $17 billion project could have ever come into existence until Higgs created the equation in the 40s that would someday prove to show there was a matter called dark matter, and that dark matter is what the universe and everything else is suspended in. Okay, now that was a 1940s equation, but yet nonetheless, you cannot argue with the science that is proving that we're all connected. So when someone says, well, I felt what she felt, well, the science, not the psychologist or the psychiatrist, but the science not only says, is it plausible? It's absolutely possible. And very so possible that the probability of occurring is almost absolute. And that's science. One thing that happened to me, Richard, is I realized that I was a complete fool. Other than being a jackass, I had no other formal skills. And I was like, why are you laughing?
Well, because I'd never considered that a profession before. But there you go.
So I had no formal skills, so I had to take the most amazing experience that a fool could have, and I had to understand it. So I am now versed in so many protocols of death and dying, but also looking at the scientific research and looking at how they establish what this life is and theoretical quantum and particle physics, you know, and looking at now that we're halfway through 2012, all the things that are happening, you know, all the things that are happening that so, when we were talking about the Bible, if people who look at the Bible and read the book of Revelations, here's one. It says that when the Antichrist comes, he'll be able to speak to the whole world at once. Okay, well, that was utter insanity until we could, to now we know the Antichrist can tweet us.
Yes, yes.
So if you believe in the Revelation, the book of Revelation, and you believe that 7 years is upon us, you would have to look to see if there is a methodology. I mean, Satan can go on Facebook and party like there's no tomorrow.
That's interesting, because then what that does, Danian, it opens up the position of the Antichrist to every single human being on the planet who can tweet or Facebook. I mean,
Right. Think
about that.
Or get on the web.
Or get on the web, exactly. Now, it's interesting.
Let me add one more thing.
Sure, go right ahead.
Think about this. I'm not a big diehard believer in Revelations. What I concluded from Revelations is whatever John was taking, whatever he was taking that day, I don't want any of it.
Me neither.
Anybody that sees all those dragons and all that stuff. But when you look at it, and you look at the so-called Antichrist, which a lot of people interpret as the rise of the Holy Roman Empire, and this new concept of a monetarial system.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, the world economies are collapsing.
Mm.
They're collapsing. And in the book of Revelation, it says you cannot buy, sell, or trade unless you wear the mark of the beast. And it says 666. Well, that's three numbers. And people, you start to look and then think about it. Have you checked your credit score lately?
Hello.
You cannot buy, sell, or trade. People, look at your credit score. Do you know the mean number of where you are a good customer or a bad customer, where you have to negotiate your rate of interest across the board of all three of those credit ratings?
You got to be.
It is 666.
You got to be kidding. Really?
Look it up.
Wow. Well, I want to
Did you know that the front three numbers on every international commerce trade, every time you move money, the first three numbers of that transition, of that transfer of money is 666.
Wow. Wow. That's amazing.
Interesting trivia.
Indeed it is, and it may come to fruition if some people have their way. Let me share with you that I just had an experience just recently of the passing of a good friend of mine in a group that I belong to. He was 93 years old. As a matter of fact, he just missed the 93rd birthday by just a day or two. But his experience of his death, as it was reported, was that he passed due to a massive heart attack, and the doctors say that it was like instantaneous. Now, his father and his grandfather died exactly the same way. Massive heart attack, it was instantaneous, and it was over. Now, I bring that up to ask this question of you, and I don't know that you'd have this information, but I'm curious just nonetheless, and maybe we can discuss it a little bit. The question has been raised to me on numerous occasions by a couple of individuals as to the statistics of the ways in which people transition. Now, this individual asking the question thinks that the majority, 75-80%, maybe more, die violent, hideous, painful deaths, as opposed to in their sleep or something very quick and painless. What kind of information can you bring to us that we might be able to glean from to say, hey, you don't need to fear, because most of you will pass on to the next realm quietly, peacefully, and painlessly?
Well, you have to figure out how many doctors are around as to whether it's going to be a violent, painful death. The fewer the doctors, the better the opportunity that it will be that.
Okay.
Because doctors have the Hippocratic Oath, do no harm, keep them alive, you know, cut off a leg, maybe take a few eyes out, you know, all that kind of stuff. This is what they think. It's why I love hospice. Mm-hmm. Palliative care and hospice.
Yeah.
Maintenance. Once you enter, when you go from curative, we'll keep cutting, keep digging, keep doing, you know, keep whatever it takes to keep them alive another day, which is other nonsense, mm-hmm. to palliative care, and from palliative to hospice, you will have an art form that creates some of the most loving and peaceful transition. What this person who was talking to you about violent death, they either were in a hospital or in combat. People like what you've seen in Afghanistan and Iraq, I mean, we've killed a million people in the last 10 years. So when you look at the ratios of we lose 6,000, well, 9,000 because of the World Trade Center, we lose 9,000, but we kill a million. And we kill men, women, and children. Okay? And so when that person was talking about, that person was talking about violent death.
Mm-hmm.
Then I can absolutely accept that their ratio is pretty high, because we have 35 wars. We have 35 wars going on today.
Wow.
In the world.
Wow. That's astounding.
But what we have now is this. We have palliative and hospice care. It came to America in 1974. It became a part of the paradigm of healthcare in 1996. It began to be an accepted protocol around 2000 that insurance would pay for it, because it was something that the VA took on. And now we have for-profit and eleemosynary hospice programs, because we who live in the baby boomers, my age group, we are the largest advanced growth cycle in the history of Western consciousness. There were 76 million of us born between 1945 and 1967, and if you look in America, based on those who have immigrated here, there's roughly 81 million of us. And we are looking at transition. If you look at the VA is losing between 73,000 and 83,000 veterans every 30 days. That's our parents, our friends, our aunts, our uncles.
Mm-hmm.
We will lose World War II, Korea, and most of Vietnam in the next 7 years. So we all have to get ready. We all have to face this.
Mm-hmm.
We all have to put it into perspective and begin to truly appreciate living. I talk about death, Richard, because I want to empower the joy of people being alive.
Yes.
I don't know about reincarnation. But I know this life is a rare, beautiful privilege that we as spiritual beings get to live.
Yes.
And I don't want to miss a second of it.
I happened to see a documentary. I had not heard the story of Siddhartha or Buddha until I saw this documentary. And what I found extraordinary was his awakening moment when he realized after 6 years of doing all the things that he was doing to his body to try to answer this one question that he had, that he'd been focusing all of his attention on his body. And that's what we tend to do instead of living our lives. We focus on the physical.
We focus on what other people think of it.
Yes.
Not what we think of it, but what other people think of it, because that's a part of the fact of the protocol that is used in being able to be a co-creator.
Yeah. By the way, you answered a question that I usually ask my guests, and that is, this came up several years ago. When I do these programs, I have no questions in front of me. The universe is asking these questions, not me. I'm just along for the ride, like you. And I asked this question.
The universe is pretty smart.
Well, yes, it is. Yes, the universe is very smart. And I asked the question that just wouldn't go away. It was nagging and nagging, and it wasn't fitting into our conversation. But hey, you know, I gotta go there. And I asked the question of my guest. I says, you know, what is it that man is trying to achieve here? I mean, so on and so on and so forth. And I went into my explanations, blah, blah, blah. And most of the answers that I would get after I started asking that question of people was joy. We're here to experience joy. But I have to tell you that I'm starting to get more people who are saying what you're saying. We're here to co-create. That's what we're here to achieve. Co-creation.
Bring as much compassion and empathy and loving expression as we possibly can. Because if we're going to be everybody we ever encounter, and we're going to feel the direct results of our interaction between us and everybody else, how do you want people? I used to think knocking them out was the place where I got my satisfaction. Whereas I know quietly supporting them and their families as they transition from this world to the next and helping that family deal with it, I'm going to be those people, and I'm going to feel the joy and love and the safety that I am bringing to them in their most frightening moments because they've never had this experience, and they don't know what to do.
Yeah,
we are woefully unprepared because grief becomes bereavement, and bereavement can last a lifetime. And so it's all right to have grief, because that's a normal process of the sense of desertion.
Yeah.
It's formulated in, I have been deserted. And it does not matter how old you are when you become an orphan, you still are an orphan.
Absolutely. Before I let you go, I want to remind our listeners they can reach you through your website, which is danion.com, DANNION.com, also the TwilightBrigade.com. And I also want to thank you for joining us on this program and sharing your story. And I encourage people to check out your information and the books that you have, the materials, as well as the course to help help us as well. My final
Richard, I want to thank you for having the courage to step out into the world and help bring our messages to everybody else.
Well, you're very welcome. My final question to you, who is Danion Brinkley?
What I wanted to say on my tombstone is this. Elvis Presley was not the only king of rock and roll.
I like that. That's very good. I appreciate your time and the energies that you have shared with us, your openness as well. And if you're ever out here in the Santa Barbara area, please look us up. We'd love to have you in studio.
And tell your wife she has excellent taste in men.
Well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll just play this for her and she'll know.
Absolutely. And thank you again, Richard. And I shall be out there and I shall track you down.
Absolutely. Please do. Like the dirty dog that I am, I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. My guest again, Danion Brinkley, and we encourage you to check out his work. Until next Saturday at this time, love to all.